Okay, so we are holding on Membez Omidez at the Mishnah. We're now shifting gears. Up until now, we've been dealing with dinim with dinim involving shahia and cooking and returning things to fires and whatever on Shabbos, kli rishon, kli sheni, etc. Now we're shifting gears and we're talking from here till the end of the parak. The next couple of blocks, we're talking about the next five blocks or so. We're talking about the dinim of muktza. So the Mishnah starts off. Ein noisnim kli tapas aner l'kavol bayis hashemen. You're not allowed to put a dish or a bowl under a lamp to catch in it the oil. So you have, a lot of times, you'll have an oil lamp. Oil will be dripping out of it. So sometimes you might want to put a container over there. You might want to put a bowl over there or something to catch that oil. So that way, at least it doesn't go to waste. And that way, in the future, you'll be able to use that oil. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to put such a thing there on Shabbos for reasons we're going to discuss in the Gemara, a couple of possible reasons why that should be so, why you're not allowed to. But if you put it before Shabbos, then it is allowed. Now, the Lashon is kind of interesting that it uses the expression, if you did it, then it's mutter. It sounds like it's a b'dievedika thing. If you did it, then fine, but you shouldn't be doing it l'hachila. And in fact, the Rambam Mefarshim will explain it that way, that l'hachila you shouldn't be doing it, but b'dievet, if you did it before Shabbos, then fine. Tosfos says not like that. That, in fact, you are allowed in. So Tosfos says actually that no, there's no problem putting it there before Shabbos. And in fact, Tosfos says in that case the Lashon is a little bit funny. Why does it say in the Sanua, implying that only b'dievet if you put it, when in fact Tosfos says that you would be allowed to l'chila. And the halacha is you are allowed to l'chila. But you have the tzlach wants to say that maybe you shouldn't put it there because then people are going to think you put it there on Shabbos, but whatever. The halacha is you are allowed to before Shabbos, but you're not allowed to put it there on Shabbos. If you did put it there before Shabbos, mutter, then it's allowed and you don't have to take it away. The ein ne oisin mimenu. Now, if oil does drip into this dish, ein ne oisin mimenu. The ein ne oisin mimenu. You're not allowed to have hana from that oil on Shabbos. Lefisha ein min hamuchan, because that oil is not pre-prepared before Shabbos. In other words, it's muktza. Now, we've talked before, and we're going to talk again in the Gemara, about the famous machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about the scope of the dinim of muktzah, which we've already discussed a couple of times in our Masechta, where Rabbi Yehuda has a broader definition of muktzah, and Rabbi Shimon has a very narrower definition. So Tosfos points out, actually, our Mishnah could work according to either one of them, because even Rabbi Shimon does agree on something called muktzah machmas mitzvah. Namely, you have that... You have something that was designated for a particular mitzvah, and as long as it's being used for that mitzvah, you're not allowed to use it for anything else. Rav Shimon does agree, as we're going to eventually discuss in the Gemara and a couple of dafim, that Rav Shimon agrees that at least as long as the lamp is burning, then the oil in it is muktzah machmas mitzvah. So therefore, so he might agree also with the concept that we're saying in our Mishnah also that the oil that's dripping into the dish, at least as long as the lamp is burning, Reb Shimon would agree that that oil is muktzah as well, because it was muktzah for the mitzvah and it still remains that way even though it dripped out. Okay, so now we're going to start discussing again. We have a couple of possible reasons for the first din of the Mishnah. Why would you not be allowed to put this dish there on Shabbos to catch the oil? So, reason number one starts off like this. Amar Chista, Afa Pisha Amru, Ein Noisnin Kli Tachas Tanagolas, L'Kabel Beisasa, even though the Chachamim said that you're not allowed to put a bowl under an egg, under a chicken, to catch the egg. Now, the problem is, again, an egg that is laid on Shabbos is Mukta, because it's noilad. So we learn at the beginning of the Sefer Beis, the famous thing that says a Beis should know the biyamdiv. That's the halacha is the Tillel says loy tayacha. You're not allowed to eat it. And the Gemara discusses over there that the same thing is true if it was laid on Shabbos. So the egg itself is mukta. So the Chista is saying that the Chachamim have told us that you wouldn't be allowed to put a dish there, a bowl there before Shabbos to catch the egg in. Actually, Rav Tosfos says Rav Chista. Now we don't actually find an explicit brisa that says that. Tosfos says that Rav Chista is actually deriving that from the din of our Mishnah about the oil. But Rav Chista says koifa aler kli shaloti shaver. However, what you would be allowed to do is once the egg was laid, you could take a bowl and overturn it and put it upside down over the egg in order that the egg doesn't get broken. So now we need to figure out what's the difference. Omer Rabba, my time is Rav Chista. Why does Rav Chista make that distinction that you can't put a bowl there for the egg to fall into, but you're allowed to put a bowl over the egg after it was laid? So Kasabar, time to goilas asuya lahakil beisasa ba'ashva. Rav Chista takes a view. Typically, where is a chicken going to lay an egg? Very often it's going to be in a garbage heap or someplace like that, the kind of place where people walk around, and therefore there's a possibility they might step on it. However, it's unusual for a chicken to lay an egg on a slope where the egg might roll away. Therefore, he says, so he would say like this. When it comes to a common kind of saving something, then even though the object itself, the egg itself, is muksa, Rav Chista would take the view that the Chachamim do allow you to move a keli for the purpose of saving an egg where it's a very common kind of thing, where it's a very common kind of thing that the egg is going to be laid in a place where people might step on it, then the Chachamim are going to allow you to bend the dinim of muksa in that case, and allow you to move a keli, to take this bowl and use it for the purpose of covering the egg. But they wouldn't allow you to do it for the more unusual case where the egg is where the chicken is standing on a sloping area on a hillside or something, and therefore the egg is likely to roll away, and therefore you want to put a bowl there in order that the egg falls into the bowl in the first place and doesn't roll away. That's the Chachamim are not going to allow you to do, because that's a more unusual situation, and the Chachamim are not going to be matter you to move a bowl for the sake of the egg, which is muksa, for that kind of unusual situation where the chicken happens to be standing on a sloped area. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos understands it. So therefore, applying that, in other words, so applying that to the matter of the oil in our Mishnah, Rashi would take the view. Therefore, that it's also just as much as it's unusual for a chicken to be standing on a slope when it's about to lay an egg. The same way, it's unusual that a lamp should be dripping so much oil that it's worth saving like this. Okay, you'll have maybe a drop here, a drop there, but it's usually not going to be enough to be worth saving. So Rashi's understanding is that by the same token, the Chachamim are going to tell you you can't go use a bowl for that. You can't go use a bowl for that purpose. So that would be his explanation of the din in our Mishnah, that you're not allowed to take a bowl and put it there on Shabbos in order to catch the dripping. The reason would be because it's unusual enough. It's not usual enough for there to be so much dripping that it would be worth saving, and therefore the Chachamim aren't going to allow you to do that.
Why is an egg muksa on Shabbos?
Because it was laid on Shabbos. So
It
was laid on Shabbos. No, an egg that was laid before Shabbos obviously is not muksa. We're talking about where it was laid on Shabbos, and therefore it's a type of muksa called nolad.
But nolad applies to Yom Tov and Shabbos?
So therefore you wouldn't be able to do that. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos has a different understanding of it. That it's kind of the other way around. When you have something that is very common, then the Chachamim will allow you to do something for it. When it's something that's not common, then even if in and of itself we're not talking about handling something that's mukta or whatever, Still, we're not going to allow it because of the tircha involved. So Tosfos, in other words, understands sort of the other way around. Usually, you would put that keli before Shabbos. Usually, if you have a lamp that drips that much oil, then usually you're going to make sure to put a keli there before Shabbos. It's unusual then that you would forget. It's unusual then that you would forget to do that before Shabbos, and therefore the Chachamim aren't going to allow you that tircha on Shabbos, because it's unusual that you should forget to do that if the situation is such that you would normally put it down before Shabbos, which goes with what Tosfos was saying before, that L'Hachila, you're allowed to do that before Shabbos. Okay. So that's all Rav Chista's explanation, or that we're gonna call it Rabba's explanation, because Rav Chista just said the basic din involving the egg. Rabba is the one who's explaining it, so we're gonna call it Rabba's explanation. So basically, in other words, to recap, Rabba is saying that the Chachamim are not allowing you to put that. Why are you not allowed to put that keli under the lamp on Shabbos to catch the oil? Is because the Chachamim are not allowing you to do it for Hasala She'ena Mitzuya, for an unusual kind of situation, which again, according to Rashi, means that it's unusual for the lamp to be dripping that much oil that it would be worth saving. And according to Tosfos, it would mean that it's unusual to forget to put, if you have a lamp like that drips so much, then it would be unusual that you would forget to put down the keli before Shabbos. Okay. Eis ve'abaya, so Abaya asks on Rabba, so you're telling me that where it's an unusual kind of saving, then the Chachamim are not allowing you to move a keli for that purpose on Shabbos? Well, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, nishbara lechavis shel tevel b'rosh gagoy. If a person had a barrel of tevel that was on top of his roof and it broke on Shabbos, and tevel is something which he's not allowed to eat it on Shabbos, nevertheless, maybe kliu maniach tachteha. Let's assume that this barrel contained wine or oil of tevel, where once it broke, then it's going to start spilling all over the place. So he wants to save it. So he would want to take. So we allow him to bring a keli and put it underneath the broken barrel in order to save the tevel. So we see now tevel is mukta. This kind of situation is not usual. It's not usual that you would have a barrel just all of a sudden breaks like that, that you should have to save the contents of it, and still we're saying it's allowed. So we see that even a hasola she'ena mitzuya is allowed. Or according to Tosfos says maybe the case is not involving tevel over here. Tosfos brings a different girsa that maybe we're not talking about tevel per se. Maybe we're just talking about a barrel of regular wine or oil, but still it's unusual enough that it should break, that you should be able to and yet the Chachamim are allowing you the tircha of putting a container over there in order to catch it.
But that's a very significant loss, as opposed to a neg.
That doesn't matter. When we haven't mentioned any such concept that there should be a difference whether there's a significant loss or not. But the answer is, Rabbi gives a different answer. We're talking about these are new barrels, the shchichi depati. It is actually somewhat common, or at least reasonably common, that a new barrel breaks. Usually once you have a barrel, the barrels they had in those days were made out of earthenware. So once the barrel's been in use for a while, it's not likely to just break all of a sudden. But when it's a new barrel that you're using for the first time, yes, it is more common that it cracks, and therefore it could be considered a hasala mitzuya. Okay.
So we're talking about
the situation. Rabbi says is we'd have to be talking about this is a new barrel. So a new barrel, it's more common that it breaks. Therefore, it's considered a hasala mitzuya, and therefore the Chachamim are going to allow you, according to Rashi, we're going to be allowing you to move a keli for the sake of something that's mukta. In other words, the barrel itself is the contents of the barrel themselves are mukta because they're tevel. Yet the Chachamim are going to allow you to move a non-mukta keli for the purpose of saving the mukta. That's according to Rashi's explanation. According to Tosfos' explanation, The point is, forget about mukta. The point is just that the Chachamim are allowing you this kind of tircha, and the reason is because the Gemara is saying because it is a hasala mitzuya. Because Abaya was thinking that it's not common that a barrel should break, but Rabba is telling him that actually when it is a new barrel, it is more common that it's going to break.
Why is that? You think the opposite?
No, that's how it is apparently. Because the barrels then were made out of clay that was fired in an oven. So it could happen. When a barrel is new, maybe it wasn't made well or whatever, so it could break. As opposed to once a barrel has been in use for a while, yeah, of course, eventually it becomes old enough that it breaks. We're not talking about a barrel that's 50 years old. We're talking about, you know, once a barrel has been used a couple of times, it's not going to all of a sudden spontaneously break. But a new barrel, yeah, it could happen that it was defective. You have a lot of times, right? You have a lot of times where, you know, when do you usually find something that's defective? One of the first couple of times you use it. If you use it several times, it's not likely to just all of a sudden break down. Okay. Hey, Sabaya asks on Rabba another question. The next Mishnah in our Perek, the last Mishnah, says, Noisin kli tachas aner lekabel mitzoses. You are allowed on Shabbos to put a bowl under a lamp to catch the sparks that fall out of it. Now, the Mishnah says over there, okay, you can't put water in it because you're going to cause the sparks to go out. But the point is, the Gemara is assuming, again, Abaye is assuming, for purposes of the question, that it's not that common for sparks to be flying out of a lamp. The sparks themselves are mukta because they're the little bits of ash that have the sparks on them are mukta. You can't do anything with them. So it's not a common thing. It is mukta, and we still see the Chachamim are allowing you to use a bowl for that purpose on Shabbos. And the answer is, no, your premise is wrong. It is actually more common. It is actually common enough for sparks to come, for sparks to be falling. So it's maybe not common according to Tosfos. It would have to come out that according to Tosfos, it would be. In other words, there's a scale of things. You have this that a chicken should lay an egg while it's standing on a slope is very uncommon. Therefore, according to the Chista, you're not allowed to put the bowl there before Shabbos to catch the egg. On the other hand, you have for oil to drip out is very common. So on the contrary, it's so common that a person usually should be putting the bowl there before Shabbos. And if he forgot to put it before Shabbos, then it's unusual enough for him to forget that we're not going to allow him. Sparks are somewhere in between. It's not common enough for sparks to fall that a person should think to put a bowl there before Shabbos, but it's more common for sparks to fly out than it is for a chicken to be standing on a slope and laying an egg. So therefore, in the case of the chicken, it would be osur. In the case of the lamp, in the case of the oil, it would be osur. But in the case of the sparks, it would be mutter because it is our solar material.
So the egg would not be a hatched egg on a slope as the nature of the chicken.
Maybe it's because of the nature of the chicken. I don't know. I mean, in Bechlau, yeah. I mean, in Bepashtus, if a chicken wants to lay its egg, I mean, after all, it's, you know, the egg is going to develop into a chick. Bepashtus, it wants to lay it on someplace reasonably safe. So the assumption is maybe it's because of the nature of the chicken. Maybe it's just because, I don't know. But whatever it is, it's not usual that it's a rare thing that a chicken is going to be standing on a slope on the side of a hill or something and laying its egg. Yeah, Bepashtus, because of the nature of the chicken, because it doesn't want the egg is just going to roll away and then get broken. Yeah. Okay. Space. Abaya asks on Rabba another question. We learn in a Mishnah later on in our Masechta, Koifin Ka'ara Alamer, you're allowed to overturn a bowl. You're allowed to put a bowl upside down over a lamp. Shaloi Yoshez Bakura, so that the flame of the lamp doesn't catch on to the ceiling beams and set the house on fire. Now, obviously, you can't put it tightly over the lamp because then it's going to put it out. But we're talking about you put it loosely over there. You put it on an angle or something, and you so that there's still so air, so oxygen is still able to get to the flame. But you're allowed to do that again, even though you would think it's not that usual that the flame of the lamp is going to be that big that it's going to be able to cause the roof to catch on fire, and still we're allowing you to move a bowl for that purpose. And the answer is, the Bote Gechini. Actually, what we're talking about it is, it's a low house, the Shchiyach Bohutleika, where that kind of thing is very common. You do have, there's only a short distance between the lamp and the ceiling, and therefore it is very likely that it's going to catch on fire. Therefore, again, it's a Hasala Masoya. But in other words, Rabba would say, if we're talking about a house with a normal height ceiling, where it's much rarer that all of a sudden the flame in the lamp should get that large that it should catch on the ceiling, then in fact the coin to Rabbi would be awesome.
We probably have to remember those days they would light the chandelier on a chain and then pull the little chandelier up higher, then it should give a light for the whole room. It wasn't just, if you just keep it low. So it was
possible.
A little too high, whatever, or hot day, whatever it is. You know.
It's possible, but the fact of the matter is we also find in different places in the Gemara that many people, you had poor people who couldn't afford a better place to live, and they would live in places with low ceilings. I mean, look, we see in Halacha that even a place, that a place 10 tefachim tall is already considered a house in Halacha, right? When you get down to it, I mean, 10 tefachim tall is only, 30-some inches. I mean, it's not exactly a comfortable house, but you still have it. It's considered a house in Halacha because a person conceivably could live in such a place. So we could be talking about also, you're talking about chandeliers, and that's possible, I guess, but it could also be, partially, you're talking about a person who lives in that kind of, like, a low basement apartment or something where their ceiling is only 10 tefachim tall. Okay. Abaya says, okay, I have another question on you. We learn in a Mishnah, late also towards the end of our Masechta, V'chein Kodesh HaNishpura, we have a case over there where a beam of the roof breaks on Shabbos, and the beam itself is Mukta. Now, but your point is, it's broken. You don't want the whole, you don't want the beam to continue breaking. What you're allowed to do then on Shabbos, says the Mishnah, you're allowed to take a bench and stand it on end, so that one end of it is on the floor and the other end is under the other end is under that broken beam. Or you're allowed to use the long poles from a bed, like you have a bed frame has long ends and short ends. You'd be allowed to. So, by the same token, you'd be allowed to take one of those. Again, it's a long thing, so it'll reach from the floor to the ceiling. Are you allowed to do that? So again, you have the question that it's not that common that a roof beam that a ceiling beam should all of a sudden break on Shabbos, and yet we're saying that you're allowed to move a keli for the purpose of saving the beam. And the answer
is not considered burning.
No, so actually what the Mishnah says over there is you're not allowed to wedge it in tightly enough to force the beam back up into position. All you're allowed to do is put it there loosely enough that it's going to prevent the beam from falling further. But you can't push it back into place. I don't know if it's so much for the boina. I mean, there's another consideration also, which the Gemara is going to mention later when we get to the second explanation of our Mishnah. There's another consideration called mevato kli mehechonai, that you're causing a keli to be immovable on Shabbos because it's mukta. So it seems that maybe there's not so much an issue of boina. I mean, we're not talking about actually forcing the beam completely back into place. You wouldn't be able to just do that with a bench or something. All you could do is maybe push it a little bit back into place, maybe that wouldn't be considered bona, I don't know. But whatever it is, the point is anyway, the Mishnah says over there, you can't put it in even, you can't wedge it in tightly enough to do that. All you can do is you put it in such a way that it's going to prevent the beam from breaking and falling down further, but not to push it back up into place. Anyway, again, so the question is, leaving the question of bona aside, the question is to see that you're moving a keli, you're allowed to move a bench for that purpose, for the sake of something that's mukta, according to Rashi, again, that's the premise of all the questions over here. According to Tosfos, forget even about the question of mukta, just the fact that Chachamim are allowing you that tircha. And the point is, either way, the pashtus is something unusual, that a beam should just spontaneously break on that like that on Shabbos. It's not really that common. So why are you allowed to? And again, the answer is, the Kshuri Chavati Rabba would answer that we're talking about is a new beam, the Abi Dataki, the same way as we said before about the barrels, that new barrels are more likely to break than old ones because they may have been defective. The same way a new beam is more likely to break. Once the beam has been in use for a little while and people have walked on the second floor or whatever and it hasn't broken, then it's not likely to just all of a sudden break out of the blue. That would be considered Hatzala. That would be considered an unusual Hatzala. That would be considered Hatzala Jalosh Sikha. But Hatzala Shaina Matsuya. But when we're talking about a new beam, then Rabbi is saying it could still be considered Hatzala Matsuya because then it's relatively common for such beams to break.
As we learned before about the Rabban couldn't put such a decree that they shouldn't be able to even go into Tveria to the bathhouse to be able to sweat. So it's something they wouldn't be able to hold out. But here also, if someone has a roof where the beam is going to fall in, you're not going to have a roof over your head. It's very hard not to do something on it on Shabbos. to prevent the whole thing from falling in. I mean, should there be that leeway?
That's true. However, I think the difference might be, I mean, the fact of the matter is, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, in the 16th Perek, we're going to talk about the dinim of what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, and what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. We have some very strict dinim of what you're allowed to do and what not, because just the opposite. The Chachamim are concerned that if you're allowed to just save anything you want on Shabbos, then you may just forget completely that it's Shabbos and go put out the fire in your haste. So therefore, actually, the Chachamim makes some very strict rules over there of what you're allowed and not allowed to do. So we see that, when there's Pekuach Nefesh involved, that's a whole different matter. But when there's not, yes, you are expected that you save whatever you're allowed to on Shabbos, and then that's it. If your house burns down on Shabbos, you just got to deal with that. So there are certain things, and it wouldn't be a malacha deraisa to put it out, because the malacha she'en tzricha legufa, because again, you know, you're not doing it for the sake of what they put out fires for in the Mishkan, which is in order to make charcoal, and still we're saying that it would be usur, because that's it, you know, you have rules are rules. So the same thing over here. There might be a difference between something, you're talking about the rabbin, are regularly going to the hot springs of Syria, and the Chachamim found that it's impossible to ask it to do that, versus we're talking about over here what might happen once in a great while to one individual person. And that would say that...
Kalashim beam can be a sakana.
Right, but then what you do is you leave the house. You leave the house the same way as a fire in a house can be a sakana. So if it's possible, if, in the case of a house, if you have people in the house that you can't get out for whatever reason, or if you have, or if it's likely to spread to other houses, or actually it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, if it's likely that the goyim are going to use it as an opportunity to loot or whatever, which can put people in danger, then fine, you're allowed to put it, then you have a tatum to put it out on Shabbos, or at least to call the fire department or whatever. But other than that, if it's a house where there's no concern of it spreading to anywhere else, and it's not near any other house and whatever and so on and so forth, then yeah, if it means that you have to let your house burn down, so be it. That's how it is with Hilchos Shabbos. But we'll talk about that later, more in the 16th paragraph. Let's go on with all Gemara over here. Okay. So the point is, in other words, so far. Rabbah has been able to answer all of Abaya's questions, that each of those cases that Abaya is arguing, that each of those cases where he's arguing is a hasola she'ena metzuya, that it's an unusual kind of hasola, and why are we allowing it on Shabbos, where it's for the sake of saving something mukta, according to Rashi, or according to Tosfos, even if it's not just for the sake of saving something mukta, but just the fact that the Chachamim are allowing you that tircha, each time Rabbah is answering that actually it is more common than you think. Okay. So he asked another question. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Beisa, Noisnin Kli Tachat Adelach B'Shabbos. You are allowed to put a keli under a leak in the roof on Shabbos. Now, water that leaks in through the roof is usually going to be mukta, because it's usually filthy, and you can't do it. You can't drink it or use it for any kind of constructive purpose on Shabbos. So we see that. So we see that you're allowed to move a keli for the sake of something mukta on Shabbos. The answer is, the answer, and it's not so usual that a house should leak. It can't be considered as usual as, let's say, for example, as sparks flying off a lamp or whatever. So why are we allowing it? The answer is, b'bati chadzi the shchichi didalfi. Again, we can be talking about a new house where it's more likely to leak for the same reason as we were saying before, because when you have something newly built, it might be defective. Once the house has been standing for some time, I mean, again, we're not talking about obviously a roof is eventually going to leak even when the house is old. But what we mean is, in other words, at least, for a certain little, you have a time right after the house is built is when it's more likely to start leaking, because they may have done a defective job with the roof. Eventually, once you have the first one or two times that it rains and it didn't leak, it's not likely to all of a sudden start leaking. Eventually, yeah, once the roof becomes very old, then it could start leaking again. Oh, and it's worth pointing out, I mean, maybe the reason why the Gemara is not mentioning the possibility of an older roof is because, in fact, it was a regular thing. They would regularly replaster their roofs in those days. So maybe it wasn't So maybe, so again, when we say new over here, we don't necessarily mean the house is new. We could just mean the plaster is new. So then again, you know, you could have the first time it rains, that's you know, you find that you didn't do that. You find that you didn't do a thorough job. But once, you know, let's say for example you plastered it, or you built it, or whatever, or renovated it, or whatever, and now, you know, it's the second or third time that it's raining, and all of a sudden you see it, and all of a sudden you see it leaking, then you could say that's a bit unusual, and maybe you wouldn't be able to put the keli there on Shabbos, says Rabba. But where it's the first time, then it's usual enough for it to leak, enough that you'd be able to put the keli there.
Okay. Delef is what?
What? Delef means a leak. It means a leak. You have a leak in the roof. Okay. So far, this is all the first explanation of our Mishnah. Why is our Mishnah saying that you're not allowed to put a keli in order to catch the oil that drifts out of the lamp? So we have so far we've had the first explanation, Rabbah's explanation, that the reason is because the Chachamim are not allowing you where it's an unusual situation to move a keli. According to Rashi, we're talking about they're not allowing you to move a keli for the sake of saving something which is mukhtar. So according to Rashi, in other words, Rabbah is saying that the Chachamim are not allowing you when you have two factors. Number one, the thing you're trying to save is mukhtar, and number two, it's an unusual situation. But if the thing you're trying to save is not mukhtar, or even if it is mukhtar, but it's a more common situation, then the Chachamim are going to be allowing it. According to Tosfos, it's really Rabbah saying all you need is one factor to make it also. Just the fact that it's unusual is reason enough for the Chachamim to say it's also. Okay. Now we're going to have another explanation of our Mishnah. Rav Yosef Omer, Hainu Taima de Rav Chista. Rav Yosef says, let's revisit what Rav Chista said about the egg. Again, we started with Rav Chista had said it did, that you're not allowed to put a keli to catch the egg, where the egg is going to fall into the keli, but he said you are allowed to put a keli there to protect the egg after it was laid. So far, again, we have Rabbah's distinction between a usual and an unusual situation. It's usual enough to have to save the egg after it was laid because it's in a place where people might step on it. It's not usual to have to save it before it was laid because it might be laying it on an incline. And therefore, Rabbah said that's the difference. Rabbi Yosef is going to give a different explanation. The reason why Rav Chista makes the distinction between putting the keli before the egg is laid and after it's laid, mishum dekama vato kli mehechonai. Because what you're accomplishing by that, you're making that now your mevato, you're not able to use that keli for the rest of Shabbat. Because again, the egg itself is mukta. Now you're making the bowl into a basis l'dabar ha'aser. You're making that now the bowl contains something which is aser, which is mukta on Shabbos. The bowl itself therefore becomes mukta. That's another type of mukta. This is another type of mukta called basis l'dabar ha'aser. We know we have a very common thing about it in our houses on Shabbos, where if you have the Shabbos candles on the table, then the table itself becomes mukta, and you're not allowed to move the table on Shabbos unless you have something else of importance on the table before Shabbos. So therefore, you have the common practice. People who light Shabbos candles on their table, what they do is they make sure before Shabbos that the chalos are also on the table, for example. And that way, the table is a basis for something that's also and for something that's mukta, and then it would be mukta. So Rav Yosef is saying over here that if you put a bowl underneath the egg, then when the egg lands on the bowl, the bowl is going to become mukta. Now, why are you not allowed to do that on Shabbos? Rashi over here says that the reason is because, in effect, it's sort of like as if you're as if you're fixing the bowl in place, as if you're cementing the bowl to the ground. Because before you were able to move it on Shabbos, and now you're not. So it's as if. So obviously it's not actually cementing it to the ground, but in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, it's as if you were, and therefore the Chachamim are going to answer it. Tosfos points out that in other places, Rashi gives a different explanation that it's the other way around. Over here, in other places, for example, at the end of our Masechta, Rashi says it's the other way around. It's as if you're breaking it on Shabbos, because before it was usable on Shabbos, and now it's not. You have two reasons, either because it's as if you're cementing it in place, which would be boina, or just the opposite, because it's as if you're breaking it and preventing it from being used. the mitzvah. Give the third reason. It's not covered Shabbos to have a keli that was usable before Shabbos, and now you're making it unusable. Whatever the case, so Rabbi Yosef is saying that's the reason then behind the din in our Mishnah that you're not allowed to put the bowl there to catch the oil because the oil is muktzah, and therefore you're making the keli muktzah as well. Which means, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that let's say, for example, you put something else of importance in that keli as well before Shabbos. Let's say you put something else of importance in that keli, then you would be able to put it there to catch the drippings on Shabbos. Because then again, you have the same issue. You're not making it a basis or whatever also. Usually you wouldn't do that, of course, because whatever you're putting in there is going to get dirty with the oil, so you're not going to want to. But let's say you do have something that you don't mind that you don't mind it getting dirty from the oil, and you put it in there, then fine, you'd be able to do that on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yosef's explanation. So Eitzei Abaya. Abaya asks on Rabbi Yosef, what about, we said before, Chovis Shal Tevel Shenishvara, if a barrel of Tevel breaks, maybe Kli Acho Maniach Tafer, then we said you're allowed to take another Keli and put it underneath it to catch what's coming out of it. Now, again, you have the same question. Tevel is Mukta. Whatever falls into this Keli is also going to be Mukta. And yet you're saying you're allowed to do it, even though you're Mavato Kli Mehechanan. The answer is Amalei Tevel Mochan Hu Eitzel Shabbos. The answer is, Rabbi Yosef says, relative to the dinim of Shabbos, tevel can be considered mukhan. It's not completely mukta because, after all, shem ova b'tikna in the sukkan. Because the whole concept that tevel you're not allowed to eat is daraisa, but that you're not allowed to take truma and maisa from it on Yom Tov is only on Shabbos and on Yom Tov is only dirabanan. So let's say a person were to be over on that. And go and take truma and ma'aser from it on Shabbos, then it would be allowed to eat. So therefore, it can't totally be considered mukta, says Rabbi Yosef. As opposed to, let's say, for example, with the oil from the lamp, that is intrinsically mukta, either because it was set, whether according to Rabbi Yehuda, because you didn't plan to use it before Shabbos, because you planned to use it for lighting the lamp, or whether according to Shimon, because it's mukta machnas mitzvah, at least as long as the lamp is burning. So therefore, you can't say that the contents of the bowl could conceivably be made mutter, as opposed to over here, conceivably you could, after all, make the tevel mutter by taking truma and maizah from it on Shabbos, even though you're not supposed to.
Which one is our marks, when I'm believed on it, it's called the mayo, it's called devil.
Tevel is that you haven't taken truma and maizah, where you know that truma and maizah hasn't been taken from it.
The mayo
is where you have a stopik, you bought it from an amaoret, and you're not sure. So yeah, right.
Okay.
So here we're talking about
tevel, where it's no for sure.
Here we're talking about actual tevel, right? If it was demai, then you have more leniencies because
right.
you're allowed to give it to poor people, to eat, et cetera. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So no, here we're talking about actual tevel, right? So Tosfos asked the question. I mean, by the same token, you could say, and if you remove the egg from the keli, then also you're mutter to move the keli. Tosfos says the difference is, because after all, the egg it intrinsically is not mutter on Shabbos. The tevel intrinsically can be made mutter by being over and taking truma and maaser on Shabbos. So there's no problem with that because then it's not you're not actually mevato kli mehechana because conceivably that keli could end up being mutter to move on Shabbos. Okay, Eitzei Abaya. Okay, so he asked him what about the next Mishnah? Noisin kli tachas haner lekabel mitzvosis. What about the next Mishnah? We were saying that you're allowed to put a bowl over there in order to catch the sparks that come out of the lamp. On the face of it, the sparks are mukta, and we see therefore that you're putting a keli over there, even though now you're not going to be able to move the keli for the rest of Shabbos. The answer is Amar of Hundabregi Rishon. It's so just ain't bad mamish. There's a little sparks over there, the little tiny bits of ash. There's no mamoshus in them. There's no actual substance to them. So even if they fall into the keli, then you can't consider the keli a basis for Dabra also because of that. They're insubstantial enough that the keli is not going to become mukta because these little things fell into them.
Okay.
What about we said the chen kodesh and nishpura? What about we have the same question that we had before about the case where a beam in the house broke on Shabbos? We said sfenchen oisim esafto oivar aruches amita. We said you're allowed to put a bench or the long board from a bed underneath it to hold it up. Now here the Gemara is assuming again that you're putting it firmly in place, you're wedging it in place, and therefore you're not going to be able to move it the rest of Shabbos. So we see that you're allowed to move vato klima hikone, and the answer is he's not putting it that tightly. They're roughly, he's putting it in there loosely. The boy shoved it like where it's loose enough that if he wanted, he could take it out on Shabbos. So therefore, it's not mevatel klima hechane because he still has the option of taking it out if he wants to. Okay. What about, again, the same question as we had before, noisim kli takas adelof the Shabbos? We said that you're allowed to put a keli under a leak in the roof on Shabbos. Now, again, the water that's leaking in from the roof of Pashtus is Mukta, and we still see you're allowed, so therefore, once it falls into the Kaili is going to be Mukta the rest of Shabbos, and we still see that it's allowed. The answer is, Rabbi Yosef would answer, Videla Haroi. We're talking about the kind of water that's leaking in that actually is suitable. It is clean enough that you would be able to drink it or rinse your hands with it or whatever, and therefore it's not Mukta. Now, it would come out, according to Rabbi Yosef's answer, it would come out that if unlike Rabba's answer, where we said before, Rabba didn't care whether the water was dirty or not, because according to him, as long as it's common enough for it to leak, which we said, if it's a new roof or new plaster or whatever, then it's more likely to leak. So then Rabba would have no problem with it. According to Rabbi Yosef's answer, though, we would have a problem with it because unless the water is clean enough. With that said, though, the tour is makel. So we have Rabbi Yosef's explanation over here, but we have the tour actually learn that if the dripping is really bothering you, if you're sitting in the house over there and the dripping is really bothering you, then even if it's not clean, then you would be allowed to put a keli over there.
Why?
So, because he says, because in that case, then, if it's just a matter of Mavato Klima Hechone, if it's just this matter of making a Keli Mukta, you actually have a concept in Halacha called Graf Shel Re'i. You have a concept that you have, a Graf Shel Re'i literally means like a chamber pot. If you have, for example, you have a container that a person used to go to the bathroom in, the halacha is that once it's full and it's filthy, then you're allowed to pour it out. You're allowed to empty it out on Shabbos. So there is a concept called graf shorei. Now the halacha is that you're not allowed to make a graf shorei l'chatchila. You're not allowed to begin with put something down saying, okay, well, now it's going to end up becoming dirty, and then I'll have an excuse to take it out. You're not supposed to do that, but if it became dirty, then you're allowed to. So you're not supposed to do that unless there's a case of hechzid. So the Altidaba summarizes the din over here. He says that, like this. So you're allowed to put the keli over there, and once it becomes full, then you're allowed to spill it out and put it back, as long as the leaking water is at least clean enough that you could wash with it. If it's so dirty that it's not useful for anything, then it would be mukta, because again, you have the problem of atos klima hechane. If you were over on Shabbos and did put it there where you weren't supposed to, then you're allowed to pour out the dirty water. If it's in a place, if it's like, you know, it's in your house and it's a place where you're living regularly, you're not expected to leave the house in that case. So again, you're not supposed to put it there l'hatchila because you're not allowed to make a graf shorei l'hatchila, but to be evident, if you were over and you did it, then you are allowed to spill out the dirty water. So the Torah actually says you're allowed to l'hatchila. So okay, we can't rely on that l'hatchila to be allowed, but if you did it b'di'evet, then you'd be allowed to pour out the water. actually, the mission of Bruder points out an interesting thing. If you're saying that you're not allowed to put a keli there to catch water that you're not going to use for anything else, then how are you allowed to wash negev after into a basin on Shabbos? The water you're not going to use for anything, you're going to spill it out in the bathroom. So then, based on what we're saying over here, you shouldn't be allowed to. And in fact, how would you be able to you know, yeah, well, wouldn't the thing be mukta? So one answer is, first of all, maybe to that extent we do follow the Torah. Also the Mishnah Berurah says, okay, maybe you could distinguish between, when we're talking about over here, water that's leaking in from the roof, the water is intrinsically dirty. You wouldn't use it for anything else. As opposed to the water you wash Negovasa with, intrinsically it's fairly clean. You could use it for something else. You just don't because of the Ruach Ra, and therefore you go and spill it out, but maybe that's not considered so mukta to the extent that you'd say that the keli is that's mukta and you can't put a keli there, correct?
How about the fact that the keli is made for that purpose? That's what we're using for. Using for negev.
Well, I don't know.
To soak potatoes.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes a difference.
Oh.
I don't know if that makes a difference. I mean, either way, if we're going to argue the water was mukta, it wouldn't make a difference, I don't think. But yeah. Okay. Anyway, continuing. What about Abaya asked? Abaya asked on Rabbi Yosef another question.
If you put the basin with the water that's tummy in a mikveh, what would be the result?
I haven't got the slightest clue. I mean, the water has ruach ra on it, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, and therefore you're not supposed to use it for anything else. If you put it in a mikveh, maybe it's bottled to the mikveh. I don't know. I have no idea. All right, let's go on. So Abaya asked on Rabbi Yosef another question. We learn in a Mishnah, later in our Masechta, Koifin es asal lifnei ha'efreichin she'yalu v'yodu, you're allowed to turn over a basket in front of chicks so that they can get up or down to their nest. Now, the chicks themselves are mukta on Shabbos, obviously, and yet you see that you're putting a basket over there, and the basket becomes also your mevato kli mehechonei, and still you're allowed to. Now, we didn't use this when we were asking on Rabbah, because you could say this is definitely a solemn asuya. It's definitely common enough that chicks have to get in and out of their nest on Shabbos. So Rabbah would have no problem with it. But Rabbi Yosef, who's saying that it's a matter of Mavato Klima Hekonai, so what is he going to do with this? We see that you're making the basket mukta, and yet it's allowed. The answer is Kasava Mutta Vatalla. The answer is Rabbi Yosef would say that you are allowed to, after the chicks have gone off. You don't say that once the chicks got on it, then it's mukta for the rest of Shabbos. No, it's mukta maybe as long as the chicks are on it, as Gemara is going to say in a second. But once they're not on it, then it's not mukta anymore. So good, you're not mavato klima hechonis. Okay, the question is, v'hatanya also l'chalfaloi. We learned in a braita about this same case, that if you put the basket there, then it's also to move the basket. The answer is v'oidanolav. That's talking about when the chicks are still on the basket. But once they're off, then it's not mukta anymore. So the question then, v'hatanya afati she'ein oidan olav after, we learn in another braisa though, that even when the chicks are not on it anymore, then it's still also to move. So you're back to the question then, in that case, putting it over there, is mevato kli mehechonai, so how is it allowed? The answer is, Amar abahu, v'oidan olav kol ben ashmashes. What we're talking about in the last braisa is where the chicks were on the basket throughout the entire Bein HaShemoshes going into Shabbos. And there you have a concept called Migoy de Iskatsai, the Bein HaShemoshes, Iskatsai le Kula Yoyma. There you have a concept that once something was mukta at Bein HaShemoshes, at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta for the whole day. But to make that it becomes mukta in the middle of Shabbos, that you don't have that concept unless the mukta is still on it. Now, we're actually going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that there's actually a machlokes tanoim on that question. But right now, we're going according to the opinion, or that we're saying that our braisa goes according to the opinion that it is. So if you did it in the middle of Shabbos, then it's only mukta as long as the chicks are on it. As soon as they get off, then it's mukta. So therefore, it would be allowed, even according to the Yosef, because you're not mavato kli mehechonai. But according to if the chicks were on it the whole Bein HaShemoshes, you're right, then it would indeed be mukta for the whole Shabbos. Tosfos does make a further distinction. Tosfos and other Rishonim do make a further distinction that in that case, then we're back in that case. We talked before about Reb Shimon's opinion that the oil in the lamp is only mukta as long as the lamp is burning. So in that case, also you could ask, eventually the lamp is going to go out, and then the oil is going to be mukta. So wouldn't it be the same thing as the basket? And the difference is, Tosfos says that in the case of the basket, it is the yada. It is in your power to make it not mukta anymore if you put it down there on Shabbos, because you could always scare away the chicks off it without touching them, of course, but you could always scare them off and then you can immediately pick up the basket, as opposed to you can't make the lamp go out on Shabbos. So all of that is a second explanation of our Mishnah. So again, we have so far two explanations. We had Rabba's explanation that the Chachamim are not allowing you to move a keli for the sake of saving, when it's a hasala she'en mitzuyah, when it's an unusual kind of hasala, and according to Rashi, in addition, when the thing you're trying to save is mukta. And we had Rabbi Yosef's explanation that you're not allowed to make the keli itself become mukta on Shabbos by making it a bosses for double offer. Now, more on that topic. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak is going to argue with Rabbi Chista's din. He started with Rabbi Chista's din that you're not allowed to put a bowl under the egg to catch it, but you are allowed to put a bowl over it after it was laid. And we had Rabba's and Rabbi Yitzchak's respective reasons. Rabba's reason, because it's usual for it to have to be saved after it was laid. It's not usual to have to save it before it was laid. We have Rabbi Yosef's reason about Mavato Klima Hechano, which in that case, of course, the difference is if the egg is inside the bowl, then the bowl is mukta, as opposed to if the bowl is covering the egg, then the bowl is not mukta, because you could remove it anytime you want. But now Rabbi Yitzchak is disagreeing with the whole premise. He's saying the same way as you're not allowed to put a keli under the chicken to catch the egg, Kahen Kofen Alea Klima Shvil Shalai. So also, he says, you're not allowed to overturn a keli on it in order to prevent it from breaking. Which means, Kosovar, he holds, Ein Kli Nito, El Dabar on Nito B'Shabbos. So he holds that you're not allowed to move a keli only if it's for the purpose of saving, of protecting, or for the use of something which itself can be carried on Shabbos. So it comes out, basically, according to Rashi's explanation, that Rabbi Yitzchak agree that we said before, according to Rashi's explanation, Rabba's explanation had been that Chachamim don't allow you to do it when you have two factors involved. Number one, that the thing you're trying to save is mukta, and number two, that it's an unusual situation. But if it's a usual situation, then Rabba would allow it. So Rav Yitzchak is arguing with that and saying, I don't care, usual or unusual situation, as long as the thing you're trying to save is mukta, then it's not allowed. According to Tosfos, it has not, all this time, we haven't been dealing with the question of whether the thing you're trying to save is mukta at all. According to Rabba's explanation, it was strictly whether it's usual or not. So then according to him, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying a completely separate thing, that it has nothing to do with whether it's usual or not. It has to do with whether the object you're trying to save is mukta or not. But Rabbi Yitzchak would say, therefore, you can't even put a bowl over the egg, because even though, fine, the bowl itself is not becoming mukta, but, and maybe it is a usual thing for an egg to be laid in a place where a person is going to step on it, but you can't move, but the egg itself is mukta, and Rabbi Yitzchak learns, you're not allowed to move a keli for the sake of saving something which itself is mukta. Okay, so the Gemara says, may speak al hanis yuta, so they asked on Rabbi Yitzchak all the same questions that we asked on Rabba and Rabbi Yitzchak, all those cases where we see that you're allowed to move something for the sake of something else which is mukta. For example, the case we said over there with a broken barrel of kevel, the case over there about a bowl over a lamp that you're afraid is going to catch the ceiling on fire, the case involving a broken ceiling beam, et cetera, et cetera. The shani b'tzorech l'mekoymei. To each one of them, the Rabbi Yitzchak gave the same answer that we're talking about in each case. Why is he allowed to move the keli? Because it's a case where he already needs the keli, he needs to move the keli anyway, because he needs the space where it was. Once he already has it in his hand, then he's allowed to use it for one of these other purposes. So, for example, let's say in the case of a barrel of pebble that broke, so Rabbi Yitzchak would say, if, let's say, you happen to already be holding a container at the time, which you were planning to, you were moving it for some other purpose, let's say because you needed the place where, or not even you have something in your hand, sorry. Even, let's say, for example, so when would it be? If you have, let's say, so the barrel broke on top of your roof, let's say, inside your house you have some place where there happens to be another barrel, where right now you need that space, you need that space to sit on or whatever, then you're allowed to move that barrel. And then once you're moving it, then you're already allowed to move it. Then you're already allowed to move it in order to save the temple, but not otherwise. You wouldn't be allowed to move the bowl if one's going to be cooked just for the purpose of saving the temple. And the same thing in all the other cases. Which, by the way, you have a general concept within Halachas of Mukta. If you have a case where, if you have a case where you're even actually when you're talking about something that's Mukta, actually, if you have a situation where you're allowed to move something that's Mukta, for example, this kind of case, because it's Tzorach L'Mekayim, because you need the space where it was, then once you have it in your hand, you don't just have to drop it in the first place that you can. You're allowed to take it someplace else. So let's say, for example, a practical example might be, let's say, for example, you find in the middle of Shabbos, let's say that somebody left a pen, that somebody left a pen on a chair, let's say. They didn't put it there deliberately because then the chair would be a bosses, but let's say, for example, they left it there accidentally. So you'd be allowed to pick up the pen in order, if you could, now, if you can just take the chair and shake it and get the pen onto the floor, you can do that, or that would be better. But if, let's say, it's not a pen, let's say it's something heavier or whatever, so you can't easily shake it off the chair. So the halacha is you are allowed to pick it up and move it, and once you do, you're allowed to move it to the nearest shelf, you're allowed to move it to a shelf or whatever and put it down there. Okay. Toshma, the Gemara says, come, I have another question on you from a Braisa. The Braisa.
That's because you need the chair, right?
Because you need the chair, exactly right.
If you didn't need the chair, you would not be.
Exactly. So that kind of thing is called the Tzorach Mekayim. We'll talk about that in more detail, but the 17th Perek of Amasechta, which is going to be all about the Dinim of Mukta. Okay. So, Toshma. Achas beitza shenol de b'Shabbos. A braisa says whether the egg was laid on Shabbos, as a achas beitza shenol de b'yomtiv, or whether it was laid on yomtiv. Ein metalfel in loy lachafis v'asakli. You're not allowed to move the egg on Shabbos, not to use it to cover a keli. So here before we were talking about using a bowl to cover the egg. Now it's the other way around. Let's say you want to use the egg to cover a keli. The loy lismich v'pari amita. You're also not allowed to use the egg to hold up a leg of a bed. You put an egg on one end, then you can use it if as long as you position it right, you can use it to hold up something to hold up one end of a bed. But it's mukta, so you can't do that. Abba koifel the klibish rushalit the shover. But the Braisa says you are allowed to overturn a keli over it so it won't break. According to the Yitzchak, why should that be allowed? And the answer is hochanami b'tzorach l'mekayim. Again, the cases you're talking about, you're moving the bowl for some other purpose. For example, because you need it, because the bowl was in the way and you needed to get it out of the way, you needed to clear the table, for example. So once you have it in your hand, then you're ready, you're allowed to use it to cover the egg. But otherwise, your Yitzchak would say that not.
Is it the halacha? This thing
we're going to get to soon what the halacha is like. Wait. Toshma. Person machsolos al gabi avonim b'Shabbos. We learn in a braisa that you're allowed to spread out mats on top of stones on Shabbos. The pashtus, we assume that these stones are eventually going to be used for building, and therefore they're mukta, and you're spreading a mat over them in order to keep them from getting wet and wound or whatever. So then, according to the Yitzchak, why would that be allowed? The answer is avonim mekuzolos. We're not just talking about stones that are going to be used for building. We're talking about stones that are mekuzolos. Rashi explains that mekuzolos means they have one end is sharp, is pointed, and that way you're able to use such stones on Shabbos to wipe on Shabbos. They didn't have toilet paper in those days, so one of the things they would use to wipe themselves on Shabbos would be a stone with a little bit of a sharp end, with a little bit of a point on one end. They could use that for wiping themselves. There's a few other explanations, the Marshal brings from the Oruch a few other possible explanations of what mekuzolos means. It means a little bit soft. It means prepared. Whatever it is, the point is we're not just talking about any old stones. We're talking about the kind of stones that are actually not mukta on Shabbos because you use them to wipe. But after you go to the bathroom. But otherwise, you're right. Rabbi Yitzchak would say you're not allowed to cover them on Shabbos. Okay. What about another bright, the Toshma? They're suitable if you go to the bathroom. You use them to wipe. Okay, Toshna, person machsolos agabi levein in the Shabbos. Another braisa says you're allowed to spread out a mat on top of bricks on Shabbos. Again, the pashtus, we're talking about these bricks that are going to be used for building, so they're mukta, and still the braisa is allowing it. And the answer is, if you cook sand, so it would be the shtayr b'binyana. We're talking about bush that are left over from a building, so you're not planning them to use for another building. Instead, the chazim, the mizalayhu, now they can be used in order to recline on Shabbos. So therefore, they're not mukhzar. Okay. Toshma, the Gemara says, okay, I have another question. A braisa says, posin machzelis al-gavet kaveres dvorim b'shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat over a beehive on Shabbos, b'chama mepnei chama, during when the sun, in the sun time, and the Gemara is going to assume that the sun time means during the summer, when it doesn't rain, and now it's Yisrael and Babel. So during the sun time, meaning the pashtos of summer, mepnei chama, you're allowed to cover the beehive with a mat to prevent the bees from getting harmed by the heat, over shaman mepnei shaman. During the rainy season, you're allowed to cover it because of the rain. As long as you don't intend to trap the bees inside the beehive. Now again, the beehive is muktzah. The bees in the beehive are muktzah. So why, according to Rabbi Yitzchok, would you be allowed to spread a mat over it? Again, we have to remember all of this question is only according to Rabbi Yitzchok. According to Rava's and according to Rabbi Yosef's explanation, there's no problem with it. Rava has no problem with it because it's a common thing that you have to protect the bees in the beehive, so that would be allowed. Rabbi Yosef wouldn't have a problem with it because it's not mavasal klima hechonos, because the mat is on top of the beehive and you could remove it anytime you want. But Rabbi Yitzchok, who's saying that you're not allowed in general to move a keli for the sake of seven muktzah, what is he doing with that? The answer is Hochav Mayaskin and the Ikka Divash. We're talking about the beehive doesn't just have bees in it. We're talking about there's honey in the beehive as well. So the honey is usable on Shabbos. It's not Mukta. Tosfos mentions you're actually not allowed to scrape the honey out of the beehive on Shabbos. But we're talking about over here. Let's say there's loose honey. Let's say there's free honey in the beehive that's not right now inside the honeycombs, and therefore you can easily get it out. Let's say sometimes Tosfos says, for example, the honeycombs might be overfilled, and therefore you have honey floating on the top. So if there's honey over there, then it's edible. So therefore, it's not mukhtar, and therefore you're not moving a keli for the sake of something that's mukhtar. Omalei Rav Ukva Mishan Ravashi, but Rav Ukva from Mishan asked Ravashi, Tenach b'motachama. Okay, that explains during the summertime. The Ikka Dvash, during the summertime you have honey in the beehive, but the Mosag Shamin, the Lekka Dvash, during the wintertime there's no honey in the beehive, because the bees don't produce honey during the winter, because there's no flowers for them to get honey from. Michael Meimah, then what are you going to say? So why then? The Braisa is saying you're allowed to put a mat on there in the summertime or in the wintertime. Why would it be allowed during the wintertime if there's no honey there? The answer is there is honey there. Lo Nitzucha Ela Lo'osan Shtei Chalit. The answer is because even during the wintertime, you have two honeycombs that you leave in there. Now, yeah, because after all, the bees themselves need food during the winter. So there's actually a Mishnah in Bava Basra that tells us that always, even for example, you're buying, let's say for example, Reuben owns a beehive and Shimon is buying the honey from him. The din is that Shimon has not bought all the honey in the beehive. There has to be left over two honeycombs worth of honey for the bees themselves to be able to live off of. So therefore, so you have those two. Honeycombs worth of honey are
the bees eat honey. Their own honey.
Yes, their own. It's the bees' own honey. They eat it. That's what they live off of when they don't have other food. So therefore, when you always have, so even during the wintertime, you have that honey left in the beehive. So the question is, of course, in that case, well, muktzah nu. In that case, those two honeycombs full of honey are muktzah because they're left for the bees to eat. So therefore, so you're back to the question, and there's nothing in the beehive that you're able to eat. So why according to the Yitzchak are you allowed to cover it with a mat? The answer is the choshev alayhu. Okay, let's say you're talking about before Shabbos, you decided that you are going to eat from that honey. But you, at this point, let's say you don't care about the bees anymore, you're going to eat that honey, so therefore it's not mukta. Okay. So the Gemara asks, so what does that mean? Ha loy chishev alayhu mai. So then, okay, so what are you telling me? If you didn't have in mind before Shabbos that you're going to eat that honey, then what would be the din? Also, in that case, it sounds like, according to the Yitzchak at least, it sounds like then it would be also to put a mat over it to protect it. In that case, In that case, then why is the Braita bringing in the matter of that you're only allowed to do it if you're not intending to trap the bees inside? We have to ask. Forget about the question of Seda, which is a whole different matter. The Braita could have distinguished within that itself. That when are you allowed to put a mat over it to protect the beehive is only during the winter, is only if you had in mind to eat those two honeycombs worth of honey, and then they're not mokta. But if you didn't think about them, then it would be author. So the question is, so again, the Braita, that would have been an easier distinction to make rather than bringing in the whole matter of Seder, which is a whole side issue. So if we say not like Rabbi Yitzchak, okay, then we understand it very easily. There's no problem according to either Rabba or Rabbi Yosef of covering a mukta beehive, even if there's no honey in it that you can eat. But according to Rabbi Yitzchak, there is a problem of covering a mukta beehive, and the only way it's mukta is if there's honey in there that you're planning to eat. Then the Braita should have mentioned that distinction, whether you had in mind to eat the two chalas or not. The answer is, you're right. But the reason why the Braita mentioned the matter of trapping ha kamash malon, because actually the Braita wanted to inform us, apa pisha chishav aleihem, that even if you did have in mind to eat the two honeycombs, so therefore you have no problem now of spreading the mat, nevertheless, you should know there's another detail when it comes to spreading it over vavshalei's kavin lotsud, as long as you don't plan to trap big bees, because then that would be a different malacha. So in other words, the Braita just wants to tell us that even though mainly you're trying to save the honey, but you also can't do it if you're doing it also having in mind to trap the bees. So now the question is money. Well, now if we understand the Braita that way, then which Tana does this Braita go according to? E Reb Shimon, if it goes according to Reb Shimon, who doesn't hold of very much mukta, less by mukta. He doesn't hold of such a broad definition of mukta, so according to him, you wouldn't have had to have in mind before Shabbos Bechlau to eat the honeycomb. So why are we assuming that the Braita has to be talking about where you had that in mind before Shabbos? E Rabbi Yehuda, and if you're going according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kila Miskaven my hobby. Who cares if you end up trapping the bees, whether you intended to or not? Hadavah Shein Miskaven also. We already talked many times that Rabbi Yehuda would say, Davah Shein Miskaven is also. So if you're going to understand the Braita that way, that the Braita is telling us that during the winter, you can cover the beehive only if you had in mind before Shabbos to eat the shtei challahs, but then you have the further detail that you can't be intending to trap the bees, then if you learn the Braita that way, it doesn't work according to the Yehuda or according to the Shimon. The answer is La'olam Rabbi Yehuda. La'olam Rabbi Yehuda. You can, after all, say that the Braita goes according to the Yehuda. My Wavadjali, Skavin Lothur, what does it mean when it says, as long as he doesn't intend to trap them, means Shalo Yaseno Kimitsuda. It just means he can't put the mat over it in a way that it becomes like a trap. In other words, Delishvik Lu Ravcha, he has to leave a large enough space that the bees could go out if they want to. That way they don't get trapped on their own. In other words, obviously we're not talking about that if he doesn't leave any space at all, even Rav Shimon would ask for it because that's sick ratio. But we're talking about, let's say, for example, according to Rav Shimon, you could leave a tiny little hole, even if it's nowhere near where the bees are, so they're very unlikely to even notice it. So Rav Shimon would still allow it because Dover Sha'in Maskavin is Mukher. It's not sick ratio because, after all, the bees could find the way out, even though it's not very likely they will. But according to Rav Yehuda, you would have to leave a larger hole. According to Rav Yehuda, you would have to leave a hole in a way that's much more likely that the bees are going to find the hole and actually get out. So that would be what the Braita is saying. If you have to be careful to put the mat in such a way that there's a large enough hole and one that's noticeable enough by the bees that they're going to be able to get out. Now again the halacha according to most poskim is like Rabbi Shimon that Dover Shein Miskaven, or actually, yeah, that Dover Shein Miskaven is Mutter, actually said the halacha according to everybody is, everybody agrees the halacha is like Rav Shimon and that. So therefore, the halacha would be, it's technical enough that you could even leave, a tiny little hole, even if it's on a side where the bees are not going to notice it, because conceivably they could get out that way, therefore it's not psikresha. But again, if you have kavana, then it would be awesome.
Okay.
Also, Tosfos points out there's another reason in that case. You still have to ask what's the chiddush in that. We know the basic dinim of seder elsewhere when they're in the sefer. Tosfos discusses the point that after all, bees are not. You have like this: the issue of seder minatoda, the issue of tracking animals minatoda, only applies to animals and creatures that usually are trapped. Meaning, in other words, let's say for example, you have animals that are usually trapped in order to eat them, or in order to use their fur, or whatever. You have different kinds of birds for the same reason, or whatever. You might want their feathers, as opposed to, for example, bugs. People don't usually trap them for the purpose of using them. You trap bugs for the purpose of getting rid of them. Or in the case of bees, also, you don't trap them necessarily for the purpose of getting rid of them, but you don't just trap random bees in order to start a beehive. You need a queen bee for that. So therefore, so it's not considered the minoy nitsoid. It's not considered the kind of species that usually is trapped. Therefore, you would think maybe there's no issue, and therefore the Braita is stressing that even there, you have to be careful not to actually be trapping them. Okay. So anyway, so all of that is one way of understanding the Braita. So the Braita can still work according to the Yitzchak. That we're talking about, it is during the winter. It does have to be that you had in mind to eat the two challahs. Only then would Rav Yitzchak allow you to put the mat over it. But even then, you have to be careful to put the mat in such a way that it's not trapping the beast. Okay. Rav Ashi says, in answer to the original question, and in fact, Tosfos says, I mean, the original question was posed to Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi could have given his answer right away, but we left the stomach to Gemara to give answers first. But Rav Ashi says, your premise is wrong. You're asking that the bride there is allowing you to do this during the winter, and during the winter there's no honey in the hive. Rav Ashi Yama, mi katani di moisa chamo vi moisa chamin. Does the bride use the word in the season of the sun or in the season of the rain? The Braita just says in the sun because of the sun and in the rain because of the rain. In other words, the Braita is not talking about seasons. The Braita is not talking about summer or winter respectively. Therefore, you can say the Braita is talking about the Yom Nisan of Yom Tishrei during Nisan and Tishrei time. The Ikacham of the Ikacin of the Ikachamin. You have sometimes it's sunny, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it rains. So therefore, the Ikat Vashem, those are the seasons during Nisan and Tishrei time when you'll have honey in there. So therefore, so not necessarily do we have to say the Braita is telling us that you're allowed to do this during the winter. Rav Yitzchak might in fact say that during the winter it would be osur because you don't have any honey in there that you're going to eat. All you have in there is the shtei challahs and normally you're not going to eat them. The Braita is telling you if it happens to be during the season when there is honey in the hive, but it happens to be a sunny day or a rainy day, then you're allowed to put a mat over it. So that could also work according to Rav Yitzchak. So now you asked before who the halacha is like. Most of the Rishonim paskim like Rav Yosef. That you are so not like Rabba that there's a difference between whether it's common or not, and not like Rav Yitzchak that you're never allowed to move a keli for the sake of something that's mukta, but rather what you're not allowed to do is mavato kli mehichani. You're not allowed to do it in such a way that's going to cause that the keli is going to be unusable for the rest of Shabbos. So in the beehive, for example, you would be able to cover it on Shabbos with a mat. Doesn't matter what season it is, because either way, you're not mavato kli mehichani, because you could always remove the mat.
So for the chair, let's say, what's the?
Well, the chair is that has nothing to do. The chair we're talking about, you found something mukta on it on Shabbos. That has nothing to do with whether you're moving a keli for the sake of something that's mukta. There, it's the other way around. You want to get rid of the mukta. So again, it depends actually what kind of mukta it is. There's six or seven categories of mukta. Certain kinds of mukta you're not allowed to move at all, and therefore the only thing you could do is at most is shake the chair and get them off because you're allowed to move mukta indirectly. But if it's one of the types of mukta, for example, a pen, which is mukta machnas isur, because it's mukta because the primary purpose on Shabbos is for an isur, so that's the kind of mukta that you're allowed to use, you're allowed to move with tzarif gufo, your makarna, one of the purposes you're allowed to move it for is where you need the space, where it's on. So in that case, then yes, you would be allowed to take it off the chair and put it someplace else. But that,
so the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, that,
that has nothing to do with the whole machlokas we were talking about over here, though. Because you were talking about a question. Yeah, you were talking about a question. Are you allowed to make to put something in a place where something mukta is going to fall in it on Shabbos, or is going to be in it on Shabbos? So according to Rabbi Yosef, you're not allowed to do that, and that's the halacha. But other than that, so for example, again, in the case of the egg, so putting a bowl underneath it would be also, because then the egg is going to fall into it, and then the keli is going to be also for the rest of Shabbos. So again, it's like breaking the keli or like building it in place or whatever. But if, let's say, you're putting it over the egg, so it's not, then, and you can remove it anytime, then it's not mukta. Then you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So we'll stop over here. We'll take up more of this tomorrow morning, guys.